Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. That is, I took a very tricky quiz on the internet and have become certified as a radio health evangelist. Thank goodness you are not dealing with some amateur.
I looked all over the web and I couldn't find that same test. So
well,
I am...
That's the thing. Not just anybody can pass this. There were several questions.
I mean, even Google was having trouble finding that. I think you stalled the Google search engine.
This, in honor of the National Hair Loss Awareness Month. August is, in fact, National Hair Loss Awareness Month. This is the Under the Dome show. As you know, Under the Dome right now is lighting up the internet, a very exciting TV series, and we thought, well, we could cash in on some of that, couldn't we?
Guess so.
Yeah.
Ours is on top of the dome.
That's...
Yeah. It's not under the dome, it's on top. What's on top of the dome?
And thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio and my co-medical host here to talk about our changed and brand new and very exciting internet presence from the University of Kentucky, service owner for telephony, Rick Phillips. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know, you can go to that shiny new website smell. You know, it's got that new website smell, WMKY.org. You know, we were talking about this between the shows last time. It's going to take a while before that starts flowing off the tongue.
That's right. The Misper Wimke stuff. Wimke is just a lot harder to do than Misper.
But you know what? Here's the beautiful part of it. WMKY.org or MSUradio.com are going to get you to the same place.
Yeah.
We would prefer you go to WMKY.org. So certainly go there and look for the audio of the shows. You'll find them there. Now, if you were a regular visitor there and you haven't been to the new site, it is laid out just a little bit different. There is a menu across the kind of the top, and there's MSPR programs. You'll find Health Matters in there. But for you new people going to the website, the cool part is up on the main page, Health Matters made it to the front page of the website. Now you can actually get to the most recent shows, five or six of the most recent shows, right there on the front page of WMKY.org. So if you want to hear the most recent show, just jump on. You don't have to go any farther than the front page. Just scroll down and you will see those shows on, as we say again, WMKY.org. Now, after you've done that, after you've listened to the show, jump over to Facebook, facebook.com/HM Radio Show, or go to facebook.com and do a search for HM Radio Show or even Health Matters Radio Show. You will find a page devoted to Health Matters. We would like to see you like it, track it. Occasionally we'll post comments. There's Tony's tips. There's a health toolbox, kind of all that information gets thrown in there. There's show summaries that get put up there. There's a lot to do at facebook.com/HM Radio Show.
Our sponsor for today's show, this is the second show in the row sponsored by West Nile Virus, reminding you West Nile is not just a riverbank in Egypt. We want to give you our 10 fun facts, 10 glum facts, 10 facts about West Nile Virus we extracted from the review article in the AMA Journal back in July. Fact number one, West Nile Virus maintained in a bird-mosquito-bird transmission cycle. That is, birds carry the virus, mosquitoes bite the birds, they fill up with the virus, they bite another bird, and the other bird catches the virus. Mosquito bites account for nearly all human infections. You can get it through a blood transfusion, but we can screen for that. What we don't seem to be able to completely eliminate is getting it through an organ transplant, because sometimes it will hang around in the organ after it has cleared from the bloodstream. Fun fact number two, since its introduction in 1999, it has produced the three largest neuroinvasive disease viral outbreaks ever recorded in the United States. That is, this thing has a way of taking off on us and infecting a lot of people very quickly. Fact number three, it's now endemic throughout the contiguous 48 states. More than 780,000 illnesses, 16,000 neuroinvasive disease cases, and 1,500 deaths since 1999. Fun fact number four, the reason we are highlighting this disease, the incidence is highest in the Midwest from July to early September. 94% of patients with West Nile virus infection have symptom onsets between July and September. And fun fact number five, West Nile fever develops in approximately a quarter of those infected. It varies greatly in severity. It may be just a minor fever and chills. It may be quite prolonged. And more than 50% of patients have generalized weakness, headache, and sometimes a rash as the fever clears and muscle aches. Less common symptoms include joint pain, chills, painful eyes.
painful.
A site for sore eyes, I guess, vomiting, diarrhea, or lymphadenopathy. That's our sponsor, West Nile Virus. And speaking of mosquitoes, Rick, I've got some information on how to avoid mosquito bites. This is...
Don't get bit by a mosquito?
Yeah, that's the information. I mean,
okay,
you can't just will yourself not to be bit by a mosquito.
Stay
you
indoors.
Have to take precautions. Yeah, and let's say somebody.
I bet a lot of video gamers don't get eat up with mosquito bites.
True, but if there's a bunch of kids coming out in and out the door, if you got a doggy door.
Gamers don't have kids.
Good point. So I guess they're safe.
At least not a bunch.
This was from molecular vector biologist L.J. Zweibel.
What did you say?
Molecular vector biologist. This is a guy who looks at vectors for diseases, I guess. He's at Vanderbilt.
What does he do again?
Yeah,
he's a molecular vector
biologist.
Yeah. Isn't vectoring like going from one direction to the other?
It is, but it is transmission. So the vector for West Nile virus would
nice.
Be the mosquito.
Nice.
So he looks at that. So he looks at mosquitoes.
So they look to see if a West Nile virus is turning into an East Nile.
Sure. If that's what you want him to do, I'm sure he spends all of his day wondering when it's going to go east.
Dude,
and
how do we get a title like that? That would be cool. A molecular vector
biologist. Yeah. And his name's Weibel.
I want to get an cool audio name. Vector engineer.
How about this? Molecular vector biologist haphazard.
That would be you. That would be you.
The hero. Yeah.
Hap.
Yeah.
Hey, can I just start calling you Hap
the biologist? First of all, we know mosquitoes find their prey by sensing heat and also carbon dioxide that you emit when you breathe. So if you hold your breath, apparently, they don't see as much.
Well, and you won't really care either if you do it long enough.
Yeah. Pregnant women and larger people are sometimes the victim of multiple attacks.
Is that because of the surface area?
Since they exert more energy than
you're
the average person.
Go right over that one.
Apparently, huh? You're pregnant and you're just a mosquito magnet. Large people, yes. Mosquitoes are also guided by their sense of smell. They're attracted to human odor. Now, why do humans have an odor? You know, we've talked about this in previous show, Rick.
Do we have time to go into that?
We have sweat glands that make watery sweat that's present on our skin. But in our underarms and in our diaper area, there are bacteria that the glands put out a fatty product, and the bacteria metabolize it and make us smell, make us stink, make us, we call it ricking.
Oh, nice, nice.
We call it Phillipsing. We smell bad. And so when we sweat and spend a lot of time outdoors, we develop a smell. One of the things we could do then, obviously, is we could try to control those bacteria. First of all, Zweibel says there's no scientific basis that prove having a high cholesterol, diabetes, will keep bugs away. I had no idea that was so. But apparently some people feel that having diabetes solves the mosquito problem.
Okay.
Seems a bit extreme to me, but I don't know. Nor will taking vitamin B supplements, eating garlic, or taking any specific medications. And I've heard that over and over again. The garlic and the B supplements are supposed to be protective against mosquito. No evidence whatsoever, according to the molecular vector biologist. And after all, Rick, who's going to argue with him?
Nobody. I mean, yeah. That is got to be the coolest title.
Yeah, because you say, I'm a molecular vector biologist. And people say, okay, whatever you say is right. After 20 years in the labs with mosquitoes, he says he can stick his arm into a container of mosquitoes and be bit hundreds of times and nothing happens. That is, his immune system has gotten so used to the mosquito saliva, it doesn't even make a bump. And, you know, Rick, I think I don't make as big of bumps as I did when I was younger.
Okay.
I don't know if you noticed any difference.
Nope, I haven't noticed.
Okay. Either I don't get bit as much or I just don't notice as much.
I don't get bit. I mean, you know, it's kind of funny. My wife and I, we go out fishing and go out on the lake, and the bugs just eat her alive. And she's almost my natural repellent. I mean, they go to her. They don't go to me, so...
Possibly. Now, the other possibility is they're biting you every bit as much, but you just don't notice.
Maybe I have a smell that they don't like.
Yeah, that's a possibility.
Which my wife would probably agree with.
Yeah. Children who have bitten by far fewer mosquitoes than adults may have a stronger reaction to bites since their immune systems are not fully mature. But adults who are being victimized by the bloodsuckers are usually not. There are some people who have strong allergic responses to the bites, which may make it seem like they're being bit more often.
Mm-hmm.
So molecular vector biologist Zweibel says Mary is not correct.
Okay.
I'm not, it's not me. Certainly Rick did not say
that. As long as it's a molecular vector biologist saying
that. You cannot argue with that. They are practically the giver, the prophets of whatever molecular vector biology is. Yeah, I mean, he says something, it's got to be true.
We should have named the show the MVB show. for the molecular
now
vector.
Let me explain to you something. I am a radio health evangelist. As I said, I took a quiz. It had several hard questions, and I got some of them right. And so that's how I got my title. I do not pretend to or aspire to be a molecular vector biologist. That's simply beyond my reach and grasp as an ordinary human being. If you have welts and itchy wounds, his advice to you, which you'll like this, Rick, stop scratching. When the mosquito bites, it leaves behind some of its saliva that has a bunch of anesthetics, anticoagulants, a bunch of things that create an allergic reaction. The more you scratch, the more you spread this stuff around, the more histamines you release. So don't do that. His advice, do not scratch. The other thing that I thought was kind of interesting is if you swell up and you itch a lot when you're bitten, you should talk to your doctor about maybe taking an over-the-counter antihistamine. So maybe when Mary and you go fishing, maybe she should pre-treat herself with an antihistamine so she won't have so many bumps and bites.
Nice.
Yeah, I thought that was a pretty interesting comment. And again, this is a molecular
vector biologist.
Now,
would that be a Claritin?
Yeah, this would be something like you could get Claritin. You probably would want to be Claritin clear. Zyrtec wouldn't be a bad choice either. Long-acting, not terribly sedating, and may diminish your response a little bit. This is a guy from Vanderbilt. He says that. Now, here's what he says to reduce your chance of being bitten. One, wash with an antibacterial soap to reduce the volume of mosquito-attracting bacteria on your skin. That is, try to cut your odor by using an antibacterial soap before you go outside. The other thing, avoid the outdoors at dawn and dusk when the mosquitoes are most active. That's really hard to do.
Well, yeah, because that's when the fish bite.
Right. Well, the other thing is, you're saying, all right, so you want to go fishing midday. One, the fish won't bite well. And two, is you're going to get a skin cancer. That's a bad idea. Take the mosquito bites. Just live with it. Three, set up an outdoor fan to shoo the bugs away. Outdoor fans work pretty well. Mosquitoes do not like moving air.
How do you do that on your 75 acres?
Well, I think if you're having, say, a party or a gathering, a big fan, you know, enough to make a breeze in the area where most people, like around the food or where people are going to be sitting, being able to put a fan in place really makes a difference.
And, you know, I used to have a friend who had parties, but he quit having them.
For those of you who are listening by the internet, Rick is referring to the fact that we used to have parties at our farm.
Yeah.
And people would go swimming. That's when we had kids.
Either you're still having them and you don't invite me, or you don't have them anymore.
I don't have them anymore because there's no kids to amuse us. We would actually have to amuse ourselves.
What about us?
We're amusing, but not in a party way.
But we're kids.
Recommendation number four. It's not a fun fact. It's a recommendation. I don't know what you're thinking.
See how I can do to you?
Wear long trousers and shirts if it's not too hot. Well, if it's not too hot, I won't be having problems with mosquitoes.
So it is a fun fact.
A molecular vector biologist. This guy is really full of it, isn't he? And then number five, spray your clothes with a repellent that contains DEET. Now, this is key. I have found this is very helpful. Spray your clothing with the DEET-containing repellent.
Nice.
Not your skin. And that apparently confuses the mosquito's olfactory receptors. I don't know how you confuse the olfactory receptors, but apparently they get very confused when you spray with DEET. So that's how to avoid mosquito bites, which is one of the ways you can avoid getting West Nile virus. See how it all ties together.
Don't avoid the next fractional portion
that's
of the
right.
show.
Speaking of tying together, why don't you take a break and tie one on, and and we'll come back with our second fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
And I am molecular vector biologist Haphazard.
No, you're not. You're just Haphazard.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the Under the Dome show.
Can I call you Happy?
Our salute to August National Hair Loss Awareness Month.
What made you think of that topic?
I just saw it. We never do anything on hair loss awareness, but we thought we would do that. There is, I will point out, a movement underfoot at Morehead State Public Radio, WMKY, to get station manager Paul Hitchcock to be aware of his hair loss and regrow his mustache.
You're treading on thin ice there. After 500 shows, you may have just ended this show.
I think constructive feedback, if you wanted to look at the new website for WMKY and suggest that Paul Hitchcock grow a mustache, I think that would be welcome feedback for the radio station.
Okay, if you say so. This one's all yours, Hap.
our sponsor for today's show. West Nile Virus, reminding you, West Nile is not simply a riverbank in Egypt. This is a serious disease, and we must take action to try to limit our exposure. We talked about avoiding mosquitoes. We are on to fun fact number 6 about West Nile virus. Fun fact number 6, neuroinvasive disease, that is meningitis, encephalitis, or a flaccid paralysis, develops in less than 1% of people infected with West Nile virus, but the fatality rate is 10%. That is, you are in serious trouble if you or someone you love develops a neuroinvasive infection with West Nile virus. 2/3 of the people with paralysis remain with significant weakness in the affected limbs even after recovery. So in that sense, as we've mentioned before, this is a lot like the polio virus, a virus that infects the nervous system and leaves long-term effects. Fact number 7, if you develop a high fever, particularly during the months of July through September, and have muscle weakness, and it does not appear to be a simple cold, there's no other explanation, your doctor would diagnose this infection by detecting the antibody to the virus in either your blood or your spinal fluid. That is, they would need to take a blood sample or perhaps do a spinal tap to determine whether or not you have this condition. Fact number 8, which is very unfortunate, after 14 years of West Nile virus and after 1,500 deaths of West Nile virus, there still is no treatment. It is only supportive. There is no vaccine. Full recovery usually happens. The majority of the patients, again, we've had over 780,000 suspected cases, 1,500 deaths. Full recovery is the norm, but the initial symptoms, especially the fatigue, may last for a long time. Fact number 9. In order to prevent this disease, we have to use an integrated pest management approach. That is, we have to know when the mosquitoes have the virus in them. We have to try to eliminate their breeding areas. We talked about that last radio show in terms of trying to find that stagnant, protected water where mosquitoes like to breed. That is in the gutters. That is in spare tires. That is in bird baths. That is in places where water gathers and is not disturbed. And they recommend, this is, again, the American Medical Association Journal says, we've got to use pesticides to keep mosquito populations low. And fact number 10, during an outbreak, or if we see signs of an impending outbreak, we have to shift our emphasis to aggressive adult mosquito control. And that involves spraying with insecticides. And I'm preparing our radio fans. I believe you will see more mosquito spraying than you have seen in many years because we relax. We sort of dropped our mosquito control efforts. And now we have a mosquito-borne disease that we're going to have to work on. And currently we don't have any way to vaccinate against it. That's our sponsor, West Nile Virus, not just a riverbank in Egypt. Rick, I included this just for you.
Okay.
This is actually from 29th May. This is about the Xbox One game console.
Okay.
And the new Kinect sensor.
Okay.
It's been given a complete overhaul. Its field of view has been widened. Its resolution is...
Why did they widen it? Is America getting wider?
I think they wanted to be able to scan the room better.
Really?
Yeah. It has a full 1,080 pixel high definition.
It's HD.
Yeah. And before it was not much different from a basic webcam. It uses time of flight camera that measures the distance from an infrared light travels between the lens and objects in the room. This lets the system pick up a far more detailed 3D image than before. It can pick out up to 6 people, applies a detailed model of the human skeleton and muscle structure to what the camera sees. Now, here's the thing. That means that this camera, by watching fluctuations in your skin in HD, can monitor your heart rate. So a fitness game can instruct you
on your posture,
your weight distribution, and your heart rate.
Can it monitor heart rate or can it monitor respirations?
No, heart rate, actually.
How?
It can see the pulses in your skin.
No way.
Yes.
It can't be that detailed.
It has color and infrared cameras that can see if your eyes are open or closed. Even in the dark, it will be able to detect your pulse from fluctuations in skin tone. And by measuring how light reflects off your face, it will know when you start to sweat.
Cool.
Cool, but kind of creepy.
Well, yeah, kind of. Let me guess, you don't have an Xbox One.
I do not have any of these things.
You know, I don't either.
Okay.
So you're really not going to get out of me what you're hoping.
But I'm going to keep moving. I'm going to creep you out. The Alien film franchise, there is a game, an Aliens game by Creative Assembly, one of the first games to explore the potential of this next sensor. This will allow the Kinect to bring emotional gaming into your living room. It will be able to use your biological data to orchestrate your game experience by adjusting the difficulty. So what it does is it says, all right, the alien's going to come around, is going to pin you in the corner. You're wounded. You may have lost your weapon. You are scared, and we're going to watch and see how much we can make you sweat.
And I like that game. Not.
Yeah, I know.
We're going to pay for that?
Well, they said, this is a great line here, depending on what the goal of the game, you will tolerate some of this, but as you mentioned, not very long. For example, this is an expert in game psychology. He says players will typically tolerate dying about four times before they get frustrated. You know, and I've seen that in my own life. After about three deaths, I start to get frustrated.
You obviously don't play online games.
No, I don't. I really don't. But at any rate, that's what he said. So a game could be programmed to lower the level of difficulty if you're seen to be getting upset. How much mental effort are you using? Are your pupils dilated and are you engaged? Or are you giving up? And if you're giving up, then they'll back down on the degree of difficulty. The other thing, and I thought this was great, the game gets harder and harder until you reach your zone of peak performance when it's most satisfying. It could give you hints when you're about to give up, or it could sell you an extra life or a better weapon or something like that. So the thing sees you starting to lose interest, and off along comes this guy, and he's willing to sell you something to help you get past the obstacle in the game. Now, the thing I'm thinking, Rick, is first of all, there are a lot of uses for this aside from making scary games.
Right.
One, in a hospital situation, if we could be able to monitor people visually like that without hooking a whole bunch of wires to them, we could obviously expand the monitoring capability of the hospital. We could
Correct.
Just turn in. We have a sensor in every room. We could up to six people in the room. My gosh. Think about what you could do. Here's the scary part for me. You do a lot of video conferencing.
Mm-hmm.
What if I'm sitting on one end of a video conference and I know the pulse, the respiratory rate, the level of sweat of the guy on the other end, and I'm doing a negotiation?
I'm saying I'll be able to negotiate pretty easy with that guy.
Yeah. I ask a series of questions. We do a job interview and we see his heart rate, his heart's racing, skin is flushing, he's all sorts of things like that. It scares me because that could easily be built into a video conferencing system.
Could. It could. I would think there'd be mechanisms you could put in place to prevent it. The other thing, too, is seldom over most video conferences you do nowadays, they're still not transmitting that HD quality. I mean, they do say they're running HD, but they're compressed. What they do is they can give you really pretty video, but they can't do it at the frames per second that a TV does. And so thus, I would think trying to deal with that on the other end, you might not be able to get the subtleties of a pulse that's racing, or there's something they may not be able to get out of it. But Tony, the scary thing is it's coming. I mean, there will be a time where they'll be able to increase the technology of the detection system to deal with lower resolution.
All right, so let's say you're on the other end. You know that your boss is monitoring, using a Kinect system to monitor your sweat and so forth. What do you do? Well, have we got the answer for you? There is an internist named Dr. Jack Birdie. He's in New York. He's introduced something called Poker Talks,
okay,
which is a program of Botox and facial fillers designed to enhance a player's poker face.
That nice.
We can't tell anything that you're thinking, any facial sign of trouble or joy or anything else, because you have been Botoxed. So here's the thing. Imagine now your boss wants to do an interview to find out what happened on the Larson case. And before you go into the interview room, because you know he's going to use this high-def stuff, you go get a Botox treatment.
Nice.
You see how we're solving your everyday problems here at Health Matters. He said, first of all, we need to know what your reactions are. We can Botox your eyebrows and make sure you don't squint, you don't curl the corners of your lips. And so we could do that. Now, actually, there are a lot of people making fun of Dr. Jack Birdie's poker talks. It may last a month or two. 10 to 15 years too late is what I said. 3 to 4 months it lasts, but it's probably too late. Frankly, most people who play poker now professionally are much more interested in the mathematics of the hand rather than trying to look at your face and see if you've got a tell, basically. I don't know. You play poker, don't you?
No, I don't play poker.
Okay.
But I also don't play video games where they tell what my stress level is either.
So maybe if you want to break the video game, maybe you Botox before you play video games.
Well, I think the interesting thing there is no, I think people would do the opposite, Tony. I think people would figure out how to look stressed so it gave you those options.
Yeah, so you missed yourself like you're sweating?
Yeah, right. And so then it gives you that free weapon upgrade.
If you're playing against somebody else, and they can monitor your vitals. You can see.
Well, you can do that too. But I'm saying in most of the gaming stuff, you're playing what they call a PvE. And some people do PvP, which is player versus player. But a lot of it's player versus an environment. And if they're going to give me a free weapon, if I get really, really stressed, I'm going to look really, really stressed. I guarantee you there will be people fake it so that they get rewards when they shouldn't. So, I don't know. It's kind of a cool technology. I mean, you know, this is a great thing for grandma, honestly. Having a Kinect sitting up in the corner. Now, here's the thing we haven't talked about. What's doing the hardcore processing of that image data is that Xbox One. Okay? Not just any piece of equipment can do what it does. So you can't just stick one up in the corner and have it watch the room. although there will come a day in our lifetime where that probably will be able to compress that technology down to where you could have one webcam sitting up in the corner of the room and it can follow grandma. And when grandma isn't breathing right, it'll know and alert. So, I mean, there's some cool things that they'll be able to do down the road, but right now it's kind of creepy.
In a post-Snowden world, obviously we are very concerned about surveillance in general. So
absolutely.
Let's say the Botox doesn't work. There is a Brooklyn-based artist named Adam Harvey, and he was looking how you could use makeup to try to keep from being facially recognized by computers. That is, you know, can you put on thick makeup so that the computer won't be able to identify your facial features? But he became worried about drones.
Okay.
By the year 2020, the Federal Aviation Administration expects the number of domestic drones in American airspace to be as many as 30,000.
Wow.
Current surveillance drones can zoom in and read a milk carton from 60,000 feet. So he has unveiled a line of clothing called Stealthwear. It is an anti-drone hoodie, a matching scarf, and a shirt that shields from X-rays and a pocket protector that blocks your cell phone. The hoodie and scarf use materials designed to thwart thermal imaging so that drone won't be able to use thermal imaging to see you from above. And he has a, this is really neat, he's got an off-pocket pants accessory that disconnects your mobile device from service providers. Because you don't want to power your device down and power it back up. He doesn't like airplane mode, just drops it in the pocket, and boom, he's off the grid as far as his cell phone
nice.
Goes. And so I think elements of that clothing, as we become more concerned about surveillance, I think the idea of having hoodies, of being able to avoid facial recognition and being able to shut, particularly being able to shut down our cell phones just by dropping them in a pocket, I think that's going to be very popular.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thinking.
Yeah, but you know, there'll be times where that'll be inconvenient. I mean, because some people use their device in their pocket, you know, and they want it to ring, they want it to do this. I don't know. Man, there's some just cool stuff coming out, though.
Yeah, I think I would want it so that I could turn it on and off without pushing a bunch of buttons. If I could just move it from my right pocket to my left pocket while I'm talking to you and go off-grid, I would be very happy with that. I think that's a reasonable thing.
You wouldn't forget which way you're supposed to do it?
Oh, I'm absolutely certain I would forget. But, you know, if I knew I had a hot pocket, to coin a term,
right.
And a cold pocket, eventually I would remember after my wife has
Does that mean you're always
going
to have to buy shirts with two pockets?
Well, I think the idea of a pocket protector then becomes a whole new thing.
Well, see, Tony, it's funny you say that because the new generation of cars that are coming out this year, you're going to see some announcements in the next coming weeks where companies like Chevrolet are embedding, they're actually taking the DVDs and the CDs and the navigation systems, they're taking them out of the cars, and they're just putting in digital display interfaces with apps that can run on your smartphone. So basically, your phone is going to be the nerve center of the car. So you start coupling technology like this, it's going to get kind of eerie.
Yeah, I mean, I know
what already. What if you have a camera in the car that's watching you, and if it sees your head start to nod, it immediately wakes you up and says, hey, or cuts the engine off or something so that you can't drive while you're sleeping.
Or tries to sell you weapons so you can defeat whatever
you're facing. Even that, exactly.
Yeah, so you would get, based on the way it reads your moods when you get in the car. Now, already, you know, there's apps that track the, obviously, you can use the GPS to track where the car is going.
Sure,
and you can actually put controls in the car so you can't drive it out of county or
But interestingly enough, the DVD system in the car can cost anywhere from $500 to $2,000. Standalone unit can cost $100. They're talking about putting these apps on that you'll be able to get an app for $50 or $60 for your phone, and it'll display on the display in the car, but it's really running through your phone and your cell connection. So even your navigation is going to run through your phone. So not only will they know what you're breathing, but somebody could know quite a bit about you.
We're becoming enamored of these peripheral brains, and they are becoming a necessary part of life, but they will be used to track us.
And it all started from a gaming console. Think about it.
That's incredible. Now, let's go one step further. This was from New Scientist magazine, June 2013. Stranger Visions artist Heather Dewey Hagborg creates portrait sculptures from analysis of genetic material collected in public places. You smoke a cigarette and you drop the butt. You have a styrofoam cup and you leave lipstick on it. She gets your DNA and tries to reconstruct your face from the DNA.
Nice.
Now, the methods she used are not good enough for forensic scientists, for these crime scene reconstruction people, but they do have scientific validity. So she tested the samples for variants influencing eye color, hair color, racial ancestry, and so forth, and recreates the face of the person that smoked that cigarette. The question is, what's she doing? Is it legal? Is this an unreasonable search? Is this an invasion of privacy? At least in New York, it is possible. There was a law in 1996 that outlawed DNA testing without written consent. But she says, one, you can't really recognize the people because she's not good enough at it. And secondly, they left the DNA there. It's not like she went seeking it. They left it out in public. It's very clear from that. I think we are concerned right now about electronic surveillance. We mentioned that. About drone surveillance, apparently that's going to be a problem in the future. And I think add to that the fact that we spew DNA all over the environment.
Right, right.
And at some point there will be an accounting of that. I think all I'm saying for our listeners, obviously this is somewhat of a mental health issue, but more than anything, health technology, monitoring vital signs, monitoring DNA, and some of these facial recognition features will have health applications. But as Rick mentioned with the technology in the cars, this stuff is something we will have to keep a close watch on. Our privacy is about to be compromised in ways that we can barely even imagine now.
Yeah, I totally agree. And, you know, it's funny. I think it'll probably take a while for the laws to catch up to accommodate some of this, but there's obviously some privacy issues. As a matter of fact, there's a medical privacy, personal privacy. There's a lot of issues that are going to come up.
And the way the legal system in the U.S. works, there's probably going to have to be an egregious breach of privacy before we get the laws we need to protect us. Laws are seldom proactive.
Absolutely.
Effective laws are seldom proactive. Well, why don't you be proactive? Take a break. Don't go outside. Keep your head covered in aluminum foil, but get something soothing to drink and join us for our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. Additional information on the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center is available at 606-783-6506 or online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. We were watching you through the break.
We're
you
a little
just
concerned.
You just won't know
that.
How.
Yeah.
This is Rick Phillips.
You seem very anxious during the break, according to the camera monitors. We wonder if anything's going on at your house today.
Yeah, we noticed your heart rate went up.
I'm Dr. Tony
Don't be
Weaver.
Concerned.
This is the Under the Dome show, which is not dedicated to August being National Hair Loss Awareness Month. We just thought you would like to know that. Hair loss replacement products are not a major part of Health Matters.
You know, we don't put a lot of pictures up on Facebook, nor do we put pictures of the cast up. They're not real prevalent, but you know, that's not a problem I worry about.
Rick has not yet experienced the tragedy of hair loss, whereas I have, Rick.
Yeah, you know. Well, sorry.
Our sponsor for today's show, West Nile Virus. Reminding you, West Nile is not simply a riverbank in Egypt. It is a viral disease that you need to know about. Facts about West Nile virus. It is transmitted between birds, mosquitoes, birds, and human beings. You can get it through a blood transfusion, although blood supply is screened for it. You can get it from an organ transplant. Sometimes organs maintain the virus even after it clears in the blood test. Fact number two, it has produced the three largest arboviral, arbo meaning arthropod-borne viral infections, ever recorded in the United States. Fact number three, it's now endemic throughout the 48 United States. 780,000 illnesses estimated, 16,000 neuroinvasive disease cases, and 1,500 deaths since 1999. Fact number four, the reason we are hammering this particular sponsor, incidence highest from mid-July through September, 94% of patients with the West Nile virus have symptoms between July and September. Fact number five, the fever develops in a quarter of those infected. It may be mild, it may be severe, and it may be prolonged. Symptoms present in over half of infected patients include headache, generalized weakness, and a rash, often when the fever goes down, and muscle aches. Less common symptoms, joint pain, chills, painful eyes, vomiting or diarrhea, and swelling of the lymph nodes. Fact number six, the neuroinvasive disease where the virus invades the central nervous system and produces a meningitis, an encephalitis, or paralysis. That's less than 1% of all cases, but 10% of those people will die. Two-thirds of those with paralysis will have long-term weakness of the limb. Fact number seven, the way we diagnose it, we detect the antibody to this virus that your body makes, and this we can find in a blood sample or by a spinal tap. Fact number eight, 14 years after we first discovered this disease, there is no vaccine, there is no specific treatment. We simply support people and hope that they get better, and that's unfortunate. Extreme fatigue may be very prolonged after recovery. Fact number nine, we use an integrated pest management approach. First of all, we try to eliminate mosquito breeding sites. and the larval population. We use pesticides to keep mosquito populations low, but fun fact number 10, if there is an outbreak or if the percentage of mosquitoes with the West Nile virus becomes very high, our emphasis shifts to aggressive adult mosquito control to reduce the abundance of infected biting mosquitoes. And this means that in your town, especially if you live in the Southeast, you may see mosquito prevention practices, that mosquito spraying that has not been done in years, and this West Nile virus is the reason. That is our sponsor, West Nile Virus, reminding you West Nile is not simply a riverbank in Egypt. Rick, got some depressing news here.
Okay. When is that different?
Yeah, as if we haven't done that before. This was the Institute of Health Metrics and Evaluation at the University of Washington. They calculate life expectancy.
Okay, what's mine?
Well, if you keep interrupting me, it's not going to be very long. Whoa, what kind of a threat was that? That came from haphazard. That's who that was.
Trust me, that would be a good name if you're going to do that. Go down that route.
Between 1985 and 2010, life expectancy in the U.S. climbed from 78 to 80.9 years for females, from 71 to 76 for men. So men had a very good 15, 25 years between 85 and 2010. Nice. But here's the problem. Compared with the rest of the industrialized world, America is falling behind. Our improvement life expectancy is less than countries of similar income per capita have seen. We now rank 39th and 40th out of 187 countries we compare ourselves to for life expectancy. Now, the other thing that has been interesting in charting these life expectancy changes, before 1983, we were doing things like birth control, antibiotics, things like that. Everybody's life expectancy across the country was improving. But around 1983, we started to split, and people of the upper socioeconomic status, upper educational status, continued to get gains in life expectancy, whereas the rest of the country started to fall off and stall.
Ouch.
Yeah. The highest life expectancy in the U.S., we've got our top counties, the highest life expectancy is Fairfax County, Virginia. Males live, on average there, almost 82 years.
Cool.
Average. And keep in mind, the rest of the country is 76. That's better than the life expectancy of males in Japan and Switzerland. That is, Fairfax County, Virginia, has a life expectancy that's among the highest in the world. But
their per capita income.
Yeah, their per capita income is out of sight. But there are other counties, and some of them in Kentucky we'll talk about, below that of Nicaragua, below that of North Korea, below that of Vietnam.
Wow.
That's how bad we are. So we are falling behind. And secondly, there is a big disparity between our highest and lowest performing areas. For men, the difference in longevity between Fairfax County and the lowest county in the country, 17.7 years average life expectancy.
Wow.
Yes. For women, 12.4 years between the highest county and the lowest county in the nation.
So when I turn 70, I should move there.
No, that... Yeah, I thought you had more sense than that.
I'm sorry. I was trying to trip you up, and it worked.
Many counties have made no progress, according to this Institute for Health Metrics and Evaluation. Or for the period 1993 to 2002, there have been declines for females in several hundred counties, and we've reported that before. But also in eastern Kentucky, male and female life expectancy has been declining since the 1990s. I'll give you the top five counties for females in the country.
Okay.
Marin County, California, 85, average life expectancy. Montgomery in Maryland, 84.8. Collier County in Florida, 84.6. Santa Clara in California, 84.5. Fairfax in Virginia for females, 84.5. Number six is San Francisco in California, 84.3. Gunnison, Colorado. Gunnison County, Colorado comes in at number seven, 84. Pitkin, Colorado, 84.3. San Mateo, California, 84, and Bergen, New Jersey is number 10 at 84.26. So those are, as you notice, none of those counties are in the South.
Right.
None of those counties are in Kentucky. We're not even close. Now you want to know the bottom counties for females? The lowest county in the nation, the lowest life expectancy for females in the nation, Perry County in Kentucky.
Wow.
72.6 years average life expectancy. Now, keep in mind, across the nation, the life expectancy for women, 80.9.
Wow.
And we are 72.6. McDowell in West Virginia, 72.9 is second. Tunica in Mississippi, then Quitman in Mississippi, Petersburg, Virginia, Sunflower, Mississippi, Mississippi County in Arkansas, Mingo, West Virginia, Washington County in Mississippi, and then Leslie County in Kentucky comes in 10th from the bottom. And their life expectancy is all up to 74.
Mississippi had several. Kentucky had several.
And West Virginia had two. And this is not, I mean, this follows, we've talked about this and talked about this, this follows income, socioeconomic status.
Right.
Always does.
But Tony, you say that, but Perry County isn't necessarily the poorest county over there in eastern Kentucky. It's interesting. I mean, you would think that some of the counties surrounding that, which are more impoverished and more rural, and you would think they would have been higher on the list. But I wonder if they only looked at certain volumes of people. I mean, because Perry County would probably be one of the more heavily populated eastern Kentucky counties.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying. And I think this thing is volatile. You know, Perry County may bounce up to 4 from the bottom or even 12 from the bottom or something like that. But I do believe it's going to be near the bottom. And I can't answer your question. Your point is well taken. Perry County is not necessarily the poorest county in Kentucky, but it is in a area of eastern Kentucky that is sort of famous for our bad health. You know, and Rick, I think we can talk about socioeconomic status, and it's clear when you talk about Fairfax County in Virginia versus Perry County in Kentucky, there is a huge difference.
Right. It's worse than night and day.
Yeah, it really is. I think, and there's no way, if you blindfolded me and turned me loose in one of those two counties, it wouldn't take me 5 minutes to guess which county
it wouldn't take you 20 seconds.
That's right. So, you know, I mean, environmentally, these counties are different. I think in one sense, we have made some bad choices. Here in the South, we have made bad choices about our exercise, about our diet, about the way we smoke. We've made some bad choices, and apparently we will not admit that they're bad choices.
Well, I think there's a couple of, obviously, we have all of these, what used to be coined through the previous University of Kentucky president, Lee Todd, was the Kentucky Uglies. We have many things working against them in the form of heavy tobacco use, heavy tobacco growers, which contributed to the use, the socioeconomic, of course, the growing of tobacco itself is not something that the small farmer would get rich off of, so thus they were in a state of, you know, they're living in a below the poverty line. So not only are they smokers, but they're also in that lower socioeconomic category. Some of those places in Kentucky just had so much working against them for so many years. We've talked about this for a long time, is how do you break the cycle? And of course, we think it's through education, but how fast can that happen? Is it going to happen in our lifetimes?
Yeah, I despair for it. Again, keep in mind, these differences are striking and they are worsening. That is, we are diverging in our life expectancy. The poorest counties in the United States, and particularly these poor counties in Kentucky, West Virginia, are actually getting farther and farther away from the life expectancy gains that the richer counties have gotten.
I mean, the thing is, what do you have to do to take a county and infuse it with the amount of jobs or the right jobs that it takes to foster the higher education levels, the more, and it's really tough to talk about, because what I want to say is if you have a county that has 12,000 people and 1,000 jobs are very high tech, you have to be very highly qualified to obtain those jobs, it does kind of drive those people to strive for a higher education level to get one of those jobs in their community. So what do you have to have in these communities to support the people that would then encourage them to want to get that education, but yet stay in their community and be employable at the higher education level? I mean, Morehead, we look at Rowan County. Morehead has a university, and it has a very large hospital for a rural population. You know, there's some industry here that attract higher paying jobs. So there is a tendency to want to bust out of that track record of the education levels here. I don't know, Tony. It's a mystery.
Well, I think you invest heavily in education because you remember last show we talked about Alzheimer's disease and how you could protect yourself somewhat from Alzheimer's disease with education. We believe that education also leads people to make better lifestyle choices and may then influence longevity. And what's clear is there are counties that can serve as roadmaps and blueprints. One of the things we've got to do is simply change the behavior. And the problem is these counties are our nation's burden, just like we give foreign aid to countries to try to keep them from getting worse and becoming more dependent on us in the future. We try to enable independence. We have to find a way to do that in eastern Kentucky. And I'll tell you, you know, you go outside the region, it's very discouraging. The idea is, well, these people are stupid. These people should not be living in trailers. These people should not be smoking cigarettes. These people should not be doing these things. We can't help people until they decide to help themselves. And you go and you look in eastern Kentucky, and there is just this sense of despair and hopelessness that makes these sort of discussions of longevity really kind of academic.
Right.
Why would I want to live longer when there is really no jobs, no hope for jobs, no future in my county? It can make you very, very averse to healthy behaviors when there's really nothing to be healthy for.
Right.
We got to, I think, first, you ask where we start. I think first we got to give people hope, and then maybe they will be amenable to education, and that education will begin to change lives. But we've got a long way to go, and we got problems. Top counties for life expectancy for males, Fairfax County, Virginia, number one. Number two, Gunnison, Colorado. We've heard that before. Number three, Pickens, Colorado, also before. Montgomery, Maryland. Marin, California. Douglas, Colorado. Eagle, Colorado. Loudoun, Virginia. Santa Clara, California. And Teton in Wyoming. Wyoming slipped in there at number 10 as a top county for life expectancy for males. Other than that, it's California, Colorado, and Virginia. That apparently is where you must live. Bottom counties, life expectancy for males. McDowell, West Virginia, the lowest in the nation. Their male life expectancy, 63.9.
Wow.
Yes.
That's low.
Bolivar, Mississippi is up to 65. Perry, Kentucky, 66. Floyd of Kentucky is number four. Tunica, Mississippi. Quitman, Mississippi. Sunflower, Mississippi. Coahoma, Mississippi. Washington, Mississippi. And then Macon County in Alabama is the 10th from the bottom, lowest life expectancy for males. Obviously, Mississippi has a major problem with their health. They have record obesity rates, number one in the nation for that. They have poverty, and they have some serious problems with life expectancy.
Absolutely, Tony. I mean, they're fighting some of the same battles we are. I feel for them. You know, they got an uphill battle.
Again, according to the article that presented this, the complete failure by some communities to increase their life expectancy from levels seen in the very poorest third world countries has many distal and proximate causes. Rick and I have talked about those. Most importantly, this slow progress should be viewed as a call for action to improve health and reduce inequalities in the U.S. And we echo that. Really, our nation, we don't think, can move forward until we do something about the poorest, the sickest among us. That is the challenge in front of America today. Got one more thing. I got 20 seconds. Can I do that?
Hurry.
All right. Philadelphia, July 25th. Women's height is linked to their cancer risk, according to a study published in Cancer Epidemiology, Biomarkers, and Prevention. They looked at the Women's Health Initiative, a large multi-center study recruiting postmenopausal women ages 50 to 79. They identified almost 21,000 women who've been diagnosed with cancers during a 12-year follow-up, and they found for every 4 inches increase in height, there was a 13% increase in the risk of developing cancer. Now, maybe the very same hormones that make you grow also make cancers more likely to grow. Maybe these women just had larger whatever it was that got cancer. You know, if you have a large something, a large liver, maybe you have a higher risk of liver cancer. They don't know the reason, but tall people, again, 4 inches increase in height, 13% increased risk of developing cancer. Nobody knows why. And speaking of not
And that's how you're going to end the show.
That's right. Nobody knows why. Health Matters is still on the air. So get us off the air, Rick.
Special thanks to Morehead State Public Radio producer Asa Hosoda and to Eric Bilber, who wrote our Health Matters theme song. And to you, our loyal radio fans, remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to our show, go to WMKY.org or visit us on Facebook. Just look for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
Health Matters is a once-weekly prescription radio show that, along with diet and exercise, helps lower blood sugar levels in adults with type 2 diabetes.
Listening to Health Matters can cause some people to have dehydration, which is the loss of body water and salt.
Dehydration may cause you to feel dizzy, faint, lightheaded, or weak, especially when you stand up.
Women who take Health Matters may get yeast infections. Symptoms of a yeast infection include odor in the diaper area, a white or yellowish discharge, and itching.
What should I tell my doctor before listening to Health Matters?
Before you listen to Health Matters, tell your doctor if you
have kidney problems,
have liver problems,
are on a low-sodium diet. Your doctor may change your diet or your dose of Health Matters.
Have other medical conditions,
are pregnant or plan to become pregnant. It is not known if Health Matters will harm your unborn baby.
Whatever you do not take Health Matters lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for our exciting series on the health benefits of procrastination on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, hosted by the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information available online at neahec.org.